opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome, 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 welcome one and all, Cooking Like a Pro. You found us here. I'm excited today. Cooking Like a Pro here with my wife. This is Chef Cal with the Miss Chef.
Hello, hello, hello.
This is Chef Krista. All right, fun things to talk about, but you can always chime in if you'd like to. Ben's always back there chomping at the bit. We just loves to answer the phone for some reason. But hey, he'd be happy to pass your question along or even patch you through if you want to be famous. Not sure how famous you'd be, but anyway, the number is 530-605-4567. That's 530-605-4567. Or if you just want to type something in and you're into the technological side of life, then you can go to cookinglikeapropodcast.net. cookinglikeapropodcast.net. Is that easy to use, Rennie? Do they just go online? Is that easy to find? What, do you Google it? I don't know.
You just type it into the address bar.
Okay, well, see, you already lost me because I don't know what a dress bar is. But anyway, I did want to talk about food. Okay, so we'll get the conversation moving a little further away from my lack of tech savviness. But anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about a steak, about cooking a steak. We're going into barbecue season. And actually, if for barbecue, we do have that very, very informative packet of information that's completely free. I don't know how many pages it is, but
it's simple. It's simple. Yeah. One page. It's got a bunch of barbecue sauce recipes on, some tips at the bottom of how to prepare your barbecue for the season.
And how do they find that?
culinarilyyours.net. It's right there on the front page.
So that would be called a website, correct? Yes, okay, correct. They go to the website, Culinarily Yours. You know what's Culinarily Yours? Because and you said that's actually a word now.
That
never
is
used
a word.
To be a word, but I started writing that back in the, I don't know. It was the 19th century, but it was early in the 19th century, in the 1980s, I believe. When I was signing stuff, people say, hey, could you, we're celebrating an anniversary or something. Could you sign this bottle? And I'd sign it, Culinarily Yours, Chef Cal. And sometimes I might write something else, but most of the time, because I had to write it a lot when we got into competing and going to fundraisers and stuff. Everybody wanted menus signed, if they're paying, hundreds of dollars for dinner, they want, those kind of things. But anyway, I don't know. It was just Culinarily Yours, and I guess I was spelling it wrong. I was sticking an I in there, so I'm going to...
No, actually, you weren't. It actually has been found back in the 1800s in cookbooks.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yes, so it was an established word.
I was going to blame my high school.
No.
On, reading, writing, arithmetic. I don't know that it gave me all of that.
It's like lovingly, caringly, sincerely, culinarily. It is a word.
Yeah, I feel better about that now. So steak. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to the grocery store. Okay, we're not going to go into all of it. Now, you have to remember, perhaps I am a person of detail in the sense of how I was trained. You look at everything and you think about everything. Just when you're competing and you're looking at a plate, you're constantly coming up with thoughts and ideas and questions about it. So I call it attention to detail. So when you have an attention to detail, and for example, when I was teaching, there was one of the exercises. I was teaching high school at this time. I've taught high school. I've taught college. I've taught all kinds of stuff. But when I was teaching high school, and I had this little test or that I would give them, little quiz, on write down how many steps there are to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I ever had anyone do it right. Some people two, grab the bread, put the peanut butter and jelly on it, maybe that's three. Well, there's 19 steps. Because when I look at a loaf of bread, peanut butter and jelly, and a knife, and a cutting board, and something to spread the jelly with, and something different to spread the peanut butter with. Nothing worse than someone that spreads peanut butter and then uses the same knife to go in the jelly. That would be something that I would kick people out of the country for. They're contaminating the jelly with peanut butter.
Cross contamination.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's more, I think it's more of a flavor thing, but my goodness. Come on, folks. But I would look at that. I'd say, well, wait a minute. They said, well, I'm going to grab two pieces of bread. And my comment would be, well, you didn't open the bread first. Then I'm going to put the peanut butter on. Well, you didn't open the peanut butter first, and you didn't grab. So you think about detail. So there's actually 19 steps. I came up with 19 steps to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And the idea is to get people to begin thinking in a critical fashion. You know, we always called it critical thinking. I don't know that how much of that's used anymore, but it's more of a deductive thing. You kind of see the end result, or you think of the end result, and you work backwards from there.
Well, they did that, the McDonald's guy. He looked at, when we watched that movie, where he looked at single movement, crossover.
I mean, are you putting one pickle on? Are you putting three pickles on?
You know, which side are you reaching for? Is there more movement going this way? Is there more movement going that way? Mm-hmm. How can you make it the most efficient so that there's the highest quality product?
Now, when I did it as a corporate chef, that was one of the things you did, is you actually count how many steps they would take on the line. And if you have two guys cooking and one's working the grill, one's working the griddle, and maybe one's working saute, well, then you count the steps. Well, if this person's, if the saute guy's taking 50 steps to make something, well, let's just break it down to one thing. You know, he's taking one step, and then the cook's taking one, and then the griddle guy's taking six. Well, when you match that out, all the food which needs to come up at the same time, it's going to be a little bit of a challenge because there's a lot of steps that are poured out on one person. So you'd kind of look at the whole line and say, okay, how can I separate this? Like, oh, you know what? This guy could also be doing that and take, whatever it is. But there's a lot of things to think of. And it's kind of really going around the barn here. But when it comes to a steak, so I'm not going to talk about getting in your car, starting your motor, and driving to the store. Let's say we're already at the store. But when you're at the store, one of the things I always look for is the quality markers of a steak. And you want something that's deep red. I prefer to have something that's prime versus choice when it comes to the grade. You know, look at the date on it, of course. But with beef, it isn't quite as important because the natural enzymes in the meat will break it down and literally make it more tender all the way to the point where it goes bad. Okay, so it's not bad having some amount of time for the enzymatic, activity to help, break the thing down.
There's all that, but I think it comes down to the cut. Is that the biggest part of it? Because I know a couple of weeks ago, these steaks look beautiful. They were called a steak. I can't remember which cut it was. And I shot you a picture of it. And you went, yeah, those will be great for like Swiss steak or something. And I bring them home. And you started taking a mallet to it and pounding them.
Yeah,
and I went, those are a beautiful steak. But you knew that that was going to be a really tough steak. Yeah. And you need to be pounded to death.
And that comes back to knowing where it's coming from, the animal. Okay, so you want... So there's something kind of from the appearance standpoint, something that's kind of on the, on the darker side. You know, it's got like that real good ruby red color to it, but also see some marbling. After that, you do want something that's thick. If you're getting out, we're talking about barbecuing. We're going to put this on the open flame on the grill outside. We want something, or we could sear it inside, but either way, we want something that's going to be able to give you a little bit of time on cooking it. It's going to buy you some time because it's an inch and a half thick. If it's a half inch thick, then you got to keep a closer eye on it, and you may not get as good a product, at the end. But so start off with something that's thick. I would recommend anywhere between an inch and a quarter and an inch and a half thick. Then you're going to be looking at the process of cooking it, seasoning it. I was reading something that said, oh, now you want to season it for at least 24 hours to put your salt and pepper on there. You never want to do that. Salt is a dehydrator. And that actually said this in this thing that I read on. It was on the internet, so it must be true, right? Well, these people are crazy because there's no way. You would end up with all this purge. All the juice would be coming out of the meat because of the salt. So seasoning with salt is what you want to do at the very end. All right, so something to remember. Don't season ahead. You can maybe marinate ahead or season it with something else, but make sure there's no sodium and or salt in there because it's just going to suck the flavor out. Then you want it room temperature before you cook it. You don't want to cook something right out of the refrigerator. Let it come up to temperature.
So how far ahead, if you're planning your timing, how far out should you bring it out of the fridge?
Well, the steak needs to come up to temp. meaning whatever the ambient temperature is in your house. So it just needs to come up to, you know, the refrigerator is not quite 40 degrees, you know, 36, 40 degrees, maybe a little bit less, but you want it to start getting up around 50 or 60 because you're going to go cook it at, you know, 180.
So like an hour ahead?
No, I would say 15 minutes is probably fine. So you season it, you pulled it out, you let it kind of come up to temp, and we will talk about the rest of that when we come back from our first break, and we'll finish up everything you need to know about the journey and pathway to a great steak. Back in a moment, Cooking Like a Pro.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Shasta Lake and neighboring friends, the Queen of Dragons has your back with premium products at prices that work for you. As the longest standing dispensary in the area, our local team knows exactly what you need. Our shelves are stocked with the freshest flower in town. From our premium, fresh, and local line to our budget-friendly options featuring Emerald Junkies and Tricana Boys. Don't miss our famous Flower Friday deals. Top quality at unbeatable prices. And for the green thumbs out there, clones are now in store for the growing season. Join our Dragons Reward program and earn points with every purchase. Stop by 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake or call us for delivery at 530-276-9771 or check out our menu at thequeenofdragons.com. The Queen of Dragons, premium offerings, unbeatable value just for you.
Welcome back, Cooking Like a Pro. Disco Duck, I couldn't find a kitchen, or excuse me, a chicken bumper, so we went with the duck. I want to talk about chickens, so I want to talk a little about eggs, but we do need to go back up here and just jump back into the first block for just a second and finish up on the steak. So we have the steak, it's pulled out for about 15 minutes up to room temperature. Remember, everything you want to cook on, you want to be heavy. So if it's a grill outside, you want it to be heavy because you want it to be maintaining temperature. If it's inside, then you want a heavy bottom pot. Or, excuse me, a heavy bottom pan, single hand pan generally. Cast iron is always a good one. We have that one that we use. Is that some, it's not a ceramic, but what is that?
Well, there are some ceramics.
One that's hanging up on the wall.
Oh, that's a carbon steel.
Carbon steel.
That's my new favorite.
Carbon steel. That's a good one. And if that, like I said, you basically just want to go with something that's not going to depart that flavor, you know. So something, you know, it starts with stainless steel and kind of goes up from there or down from there. But I mean, stainless steel is a great way to cook, but you just want to get something that's thick. I've noticed a lot of times they'll use a type, or a grade of stainless steel that isn't really going to allow you to get it hot enough without it starting to tweak and bend and burn and whatever. So a heavy bottom pot, you add your oil, let the oil warm up. That's probably one of the biggest challenges that I see with people when they're cooking in a pan. They'll add oil and then start throwing in ingredients. The oil needs to get hot because now you got a pot and you got getting it hot. You dump your oil in there and then you dump, which is room temperature, and then you dump all your ingredients in there, which are room temperature at the most. And you just reduce that heat, and now you're not going to get that. It's going to take a while to get that browning, you know, that caramelization effect, or mallard, I guess, is the technical term that they use.
I do have a question.
Sure.
Heat the pot, add oil, or add oil, heat the pot?
Heat the pot, then add the oil.
Okay.
Yeah, because the one thing you want to do is just make sure that you get a good oil, an oil that you can get to a high temp. You know, look at your oil first and see what it says on there. If it says you can't get the oil to, you know, don't get it higher than 120 degrees, then you're going to use it for salad dressing or something. Because once it gets certain, well, all oils will eventually break down at higher temperature. It just depends on how high it will get. We call that, once it gets too high, we call it smoking point, which is obvious for the reason you call it that, because it starts to smoke. Start to smoke, just start over, okay? And wipe it out, get a completely clean pan, start over, because, you know, that searing or singeing flavor can completely ruin a dish. Especially like an Asian dish. It's real easy to go to a Chinese restaurant and have a dish that was cooked in a wok or cooked over too high of a heat, and it's got that singedness to it. It's nothing good about that. But again, just lightly oil, just enough to cover the bottom, and then put the steak in there flat. And another thing that this blog thing that I looked at said was that don't just put it in there, don't touch it. Well, yes. Kind of, but it also said don't press it down, and you want to press it down. I don't know if you've ever noticed where you've pan fried something and it was nice and brown all around the edges, but it wasn't brown in the middle. That's because I didn't press it down. You always press it down. If I'm cooking 50 steaks at a time, I cook them all, I go through with my tongs and I tap them all. And every time I tap a steak, I hear that. That means that the meat has now been pushed down, so it's going to brown properly.
And you don't need to put a bit of heavy weight on it, right? You're just talking a little bit of pressure to somebody's contact.
Yeah, generally, a steak weight is only used when you have people that probably should have ordered a hamburger instead of a steak. You know, because what you're doing is you're saying here, squeeze all the juice out of me, right? I want to be well done. I don't want to have, you know, I want to have the majority of the meat flavor extracted from me. And that was another thing that this article said, and that's why you just can't read everything or believe everything you read. It said to take a paper towel and pat it dry to get it nice and dry.
That's a question I have for you.
Yeah, you're taking flavor off.
But are you going to get the same type of caramelization? Because they're always saying that you need to have a drier steak before you put it on.
Well, yeah, but I'm not saying dry it into oblivion and take flavor out of that. Now, let's go to a chicken. Same thing with a chicken. A chicken skin, yeah, you can dry that off. You want it to be nice and dry because you want it to caramelize and crisp. But meat is not, there's no skin on it. You're just putting the actual protein right on something, and you want it to sear. Yes, and you want to sear all the way across. And you're not dipping a steak in water or something before you put it in there. So it's not going to be wet. But it's okay if it's moist. You don't want blood dripping out of it, the purge or anything like that. But, you know, you don't want to dry it off. You don't want to pull that much flavor out. And then really it's just a matter from there is if you want to butter baste it. You see a lot of that going on, and on TV it seems like everybody wants to throw butter in the pan and then, you know, tip the pan up and baste it and throw in some, you know, an herb of some sort. You see Ramsay do that all the time. He kind of started it, I think, you know, in a bigger scale. Now it seems like everybody does it. And it does give flavor. You're basting it, you're throwing that flavor over, so you throw in some herbs, throw in some butter, tip the pan up, and then just as that butter melts and comes down and mixes in and combines with those grease flavors, the meat flavors and juices, then you're just spooning it right over the top. And then I just cook it to the desired temperature, let it rest, slice it. If you're going to slice it, always slice across the grain, always across the grain.
How long should it rest?
You know, and resting is just the term we use to, you know, allow the activity that's going on inside the meat to kind of slow down. So when you cut it, all the juice doesn't come out. Kind of like a barbecue, and someone takes out the tri-tip, puts it on a cutting board, which is great and dandy if you're going to eat the cutting board, because that's where all the flavor's going, because you didn't, all those juices are going to escape as soon as you make that cut. So allow that activity to kind of slow down.
I would say
probably 10 or 15 minutes, but I would break that down to the size of the roast. Because, you know, if it's just a simple steak, maybe 5 or 6 minutes is fine. If it's a 1-inch thick piece of steak, that's probably fine. Because you don't want to eat the food cold, and you don't want to medium, you do want to, you know, hot, but it's going to be, you know, gluten hot. It's not going to be sizzling on your plate. Unless, well, if you want that, then get your plate that hot. You know, hot food on hot plates and cold food on cold plates. That's kind of the theory they use when you go to a Mexican restaurant and have fajitas.
Do they do sizzling steaks, like sizzling platter steaks?
Oh, I think they do anything and everything. I've been to places where they'll do the steak, but it's basically a presentation thing. You have the container, the heavy bottom stainless steel or iron or cast iron, whatever container that you're going to send out into the dining room. Someplace like, you know, in the oven or someplace where it stays really hot. And then you pull it out, and then right when the server comes up to pick it up, you know, with a towel, you just put the steak on there, you know, last second. So by the time it goes out in the dining room, when you see fajitas, it's mm-hmm. like, ooh, what was that just went by? Because, you know, you can smell it.
You
have
smoke.
More aromatic activity going, you know, all that stuff just, you know, the aromas just spreading through the room. That's one of the things with the French cooking, when we did tableside cooking, was that people would say, wow, what was that? You know, when they carry something by and it's sizzling or it's making noise, and sometimes just because of the presentation. But anyway, I did want to talk a little bit about eggs, just because, folks, you got to eat them. You know, the prices have come down, but you got to eat them. You need to start the day off with at least two eggs. You know, and one thing a lot of people don't understand that I've seen people do is they'll take the egg yolks and not eat the whites. Well, there's more protein in egg whites than there are in the yolk. But on the other side of that, there's more water in the whites than there is in the yolk.
Correct.
But there is more protein in whites. That's why if a lot of times people say, I want an egg white omelet, then they're starting off with something that's very, high protein first off in the morning. But, and that's great. You know, your body's been fasting for however long it has been since you've had dinner or cookies and ice cream or whatever you had last. So yeah, your body's gonna need something, and protein is something that's gonna be going after. But one thing I wanted to touch on this, because we're writing the cookbook, is that the size of the egg makes a difference. So if it doesn't just say on the recipe the size of egg, then you can just assume that it's going to be a large egg. Assume it's going to be a large egg. A large egg is the most popular egg. But if I'm at home and I'm using, you know, eggs from our little fluffernutter chicken, he's just the coolest looking chicken ever, but his eggs are like, you know, extra small. And if it says, you know, put in, you know, four eggs, and I'm using the little ones, they're almost half the size of a double A. So there would be a big amount of difference in the product that's going in as far as the volume of the ingredient. You know, so that's something you want to think about. Look for the size of the egg. And again, if it doesn't say, I would just go with medium. But, you know, keep an eye on it. And also, it really kind of comes down to, why is the egg being added? Is it a filler? Is it a binder? Is it just an extension? Is it part of the main, you know, like my mom used to make this cauliflower cheese, an egg casserole, like a cauliflower casserole it was a lot of egg. It was almost like, you know, like they have what people know it's called an omelet, but if you don't fold it in half to make it look like an omelet, then you can just mix it all up, and then they use the term scramble. I think cooks just got lazy. Okay, so instead of a quick service restaurant that does breakfast. I'm not going to name any of them, but they just have a lot of scrambles on there. It's just easier because anyone can sit in the back and scramble something, you know. But it does take a little more talent to make an omelet.
I always made scrambles growing up because I didn't know how to control the egg to make an omelet.
There you go. No, and you see people, you know, flip egg omelets and land all over the place. But you need to practice. And we need to do a little video on that. We should do a short on how to do that, because there's an easy way to train. I've trained thousands, if not tens of thousands of people on how to flip eggs, and it's not overly difficult. But again, just remember the size of the egg, you know, what it's going to be adding. I like a small, like again, with almost 90% of an egg white being water, I like going with smaller eggs, because the larger the egg gets, the more volume, the higher volume of water you're getting. And when you've cooked an egg and it's been fried, people will call it, like in the old days, a fried egg, where it's kind of like brown around the outside and it's kind of frizzled. Mm-hmm. I can't stand that. But that's,
that's the way I grew up having.
But it's just harder to eat. I mean, I'm not trying to floss here for breakfast. I just want to eat an egg, you know, and I want to eat the whole egg and not all the brown stuff. So, but anyway, a variety of ways of cooking your eggs. But anyway, we're going to go ahead and take a break here at the bottom of the hour. You have found us cooking like a pro. We'll be back in just a moment.
Invest in your future today with a degree or certificate from Shasta College. Get job ready fast with one of our high demand career technical programs like nursing, heavy equipment, and welding. Or work on transferring to a CSU or UC with guaranteed placement. Full-time students get 2 years tuition free. Summer session begins June 9th. Click or call 242-7650. Your success starts at Shasta College.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Save 20 to 30% off all plants at Turtle Bay's 33rd Annual Spring Plant Sale, featuring heirloom vegetables, hard-to-find perennials, shrubs, California natives, and more. The nursery specializes in drought-tolerant plants that thrive in Redding's climate. The members-only sale will take place on Friday, April 4th, 4 to 7 p.m., and the public sale will be held on Saturday, April 5th, 9 to 3 p.m. at 1100 Arboretum Drive. Learn more at turtlebaynursery.org.
Homegrown tomatoes up in the morning and out in the garden. Get your ripe ones, don't get a hard one.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. And oh, you know, it's real good to do with that homegrown tomato, as Mr. Denver said there. Make a great tomato sauce, and then you put that on your pizza. So we'd like to take this moment to thank Charlie's Pizza, Tap House, and Anderson. And there's shopping center down there, the Gateway Shopping Center, and for being a sponsor for the show. Mary's Pizza Shack, again, what they formerly were, and now it's Charlie's. They serve homemade Italian classics, just like Grandma and Nonna used to make. Nonna Mary used to make them. Authentic pizza, juicy burgers, Italian pastas, crisp salads, and amazing selection of appetizers. I personally like the chicken wings down there. They do a great job. I think my son liked the lemon pepper ones. And they also make a great creamy gelato. So you need to get down there and try that. They have a premium beer wall up here for the North State. You can go up and taste beers at 1 ounce a pop and then find something you like before you buy it. That's always kind of nice. You know, sometimes you just never know when you want to try something new what it's going to taste like. So, and if you got kids, Charlie's is the place for you. They've opened up their adventure room, meeting all your kids' favorite birthday needs. Little ones can bounce, jump, play, and just a massive inflatable playground. Plus, they can become pizza pros, cooked alongside Charlie himself as he shows them and demonstrates how to make their own pie. And then he takes off, cooks it, and brings it back. So they're entertained as well. So whether it's date night, a business lunch, or a birthday bash, Charlie's has got you covered. So don't forget to join the rewards program as well for instant perks. And again, just south of town, Gateway Shopping Center. Stop by and visit Charlie's or check them out at charlies.com. All right, so we were chatting about eggs and my wife, it's okay that she likes the crispy ones. That's fine. It's just something in the profession, if you ever cooked one that was crispy, you know, you wouldn't put it out. So I was only familiar with those eggs that were a little frizzled around the sides, maybe at home when, you know, dad would or mom would just crack them right into the pan. They just got done cooking the bacon in because, you know, You don't want to waste any of that bacon grease. But it is a homestyle way. And I know you said off air that, you know, that was your way of doing it, the way you were growing up on that.
Yeah, color, crispiness, salt, pepper, yeah.
Nice and easy. Well, you definitely don't want to go too crazy on flavor. I would agree with as well, because, you know, you want to taste the egg. I mean, you know, just really just the light salt and pepper. It's just, and you've really got the perfect thing. Let's see here. Oh, artificial dyes. I wanted to talk a little bit about that because banning dyes was in the, it's been in the news quite a bit lately. And in the talk now is that looks like that might be something that goes through. It might take a couple years to get it completely out of our food, which is, damaging us, our bodies. We've talked about in the past that the FDA here in the United States has, you know, up to 10,000 different ingredients that they can put in all the food that we eat. 10,000. And you go over to Europe and they have 700. So they don't have all these chemicals and dyes and preservatives and things, you know, anti-caking agents. And I mean, it just goes on and on. You know, meat glue, you know, I mean, it's kind of disgusting. You really don't want to go into it too much. But as far as the dyes go, they've been connected to so many things that are negative, you know, and starting with, you know, a red number 40. That's kind of the one that most people think of right off the bat when you think about artificial dyes being bad for you. That's, you know, it's bad for your gut health. It's also can cause inflammatory issues. And you think about all the things. I mean, do you take a handful of, you know, M&Ms or Skittles or something like that? It's got all of these colors in it and pop them in your mouth. And,
which is what I did right before we came.
Yeah.
I was sitting opening the bag going, oh, there's red, you know, there's green, there's blue, there's yellow. Oh, dear.
Yeah, we're not sucking on the coloring paste, but still, I think it is something that you can get. And that's kind of the reason that I'm bringing this up is there are natural ways to do that. And that's what this is doing, is getting companies from doing the more expensive, better for you way of mass producing something to something that's going to be, just faster, more economical, and regardless of whether it's good for you or not. I mean, blue number one, you got rashes and hives and even nasal congestion. So, you know, that can be thought of as even allergies, and a yellow 5 and 6, and green number 3, both those are kind of, neurobehavioral concerns for children. And when you see all this autism, and I know that they talk about it, where I don't remember ever when I was young knowing someone that had allergies or that was autistic.
Nope.
You know, and now it's, I don't know, I mean, it's crazy. It's like 1 out of 30 or 40 or something. Whatever it is, it's so dominant where it used to be like 1 out of 2,000. And that's the thing that, you know, we are what we eat. So we really need to start being aware and, paying attention, right, to what it is we're eating. And a lot of the things that you find these in are also things that aren't overly good for you that you should be, you know, regulating, you know, somewhat. And those are the sweets. You know, these colors are in your ice creams, they're in your jellies, yogurts, first off, candies. More than anything, and even your, you know, even the drugs,
sodas,
yeah. So, well, very much so in sodas, and again, also in drugs and even cosmetics. So it's kind of like plastic, you know, where there's plastic in the air, plastic in the water, plastic in the soil, you know, plastic in us, you know. So those things, I think, I'm not sure what comes out of the back of the airplanes. That could be plastic too. It might be, I think they say it might be metals, but we're not going to get into the, you know, the crazy thinking. Well, it's probably not crazy, but anyway, but something that I really appreciate, and that's someone like Kraft, Kraft macaroni and cheese. You look at that, and we're actually going to have a great discussion. So hang on to the last segment. We're going to be talking a little more in depth about mac and cheese, but you know, they got that real bright orange color in mac and cheese, and they used to use red dye number 40, but it's been almost 10 years, well, 8 years, back in 2015, so almost 10 years since they volunteered to remove that coloring. So they don't use a coloring, but they use something that's natural. They use a mixture of paprika, turmeric, I mean, things we have around the house. At least we do. I'm as most people do. And annanato, which is, it comes from a Chinese seed. It's kind of, it's a tropical tree, and it's got this fruit. Inside the fruit is this seed, and they crush that seed, and it gives you that blue, kind of orangish red look. But anyway, you know, matter of fact, if you go into a Mexican restaurant, and you have your Mexican rice, and it has that little bit of orange hue to it.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's what's in it. It's used a lot in Hispanic foods. That's the, annanato. Am I saying that right?
Annanato.
It's my Italian French background. It's causing me to try to drag the throat, make it sound a little French. But anyway, but there's so many things that you can use besides that. And so you really need to first off say, okay, you know, especially in children, their young minds are still, developing. But what are you or what are they sensitive to? What are you sensitive to? There's all kinds of tests you can take these days that will tell you whether you're allergic to, pistachios or blueberries or whatever it is. But kind of find that out. And I'm not sure if I agree with all the tests. But, if you eat some and you don't feel good, then you don't eat it again. But things like beet juice. I mean, we all get all these things. Figure it out. If it stains your fingers, you can use it to color your food, right? Pomegranates, beets, cranberries, dealing with purple cabbage is another one. Turmeric, saffron, hibiscus, and carrot juice. All these things will add pigmentation, some sort of a coloring, like off on your fingers. So certainly it's going to be able to, but it's a pure natural, well, as long as the food was, protected and grown, in organic type, conditions.
My question is, why do you even need to color it? I mean, I look at cheese. Cheese comes from milk. Milk is white. Cheese is not yellow. That is a marketing gimmick.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that, we'll get more about this in our next one. But as far as if I'm cooking for a kid, I'm in the restaurant, I'm cooking kid, someone says, my kid, they just like mac and cheese. Well, it's not just the color of the mac and cheese, the sauce and the pasta. It's the visual appearance of it. And if they're used to something that looks like Kraft mac and cheese, then I'll put, a drop or two of food coloring in it, of yellow food coloring, because it will make it look instantly like Kraft mac and cheese. Now, if I have some paprika and turmeric and annanato hanging out, I could use that instead. But now that they use that instead of the dye number 40, the red dye number 40. But it's, for me, it's visually what these kids are going to be more used to. And I think it causes the dish from their viewpoint to be more palatable.
So that's the thing, is everybody's been trained to see that. Where I look at it, a white mac and cheese to me is way more, it feels more healthy to me.
well, for me too, simply because that's what I was raised on. Mom made mac and cheese, and actually that's one of the recipes in the cookbook, is her, I have a few different mac and cheeses, so we'll talk about that in the last segment here coming up. But I think that if you find out what you're sensitive to, what's your body like, what does your body not like, and when you figure out what those things are, then cut them out of your diet and then find alternatives. I mean, I don't think it's that difficult to learn how to eat something that might be a different color. But again, I think to answer your question, it's for a young child, it's just more palatable because they're in their mind, they're looking at it and they're seeing, mac and cheese, and it's normally orange.
It'll be interesting to see how quickly that these companies can turn around, because they're doing it in other countries. So they can say to them, what are you guys doing? How are we going to do this?
Well, the same companies are doing it in other countries.
True.
If Kellogg's or whoever the parent company is that owns them now are making Fruit Loops, they're just making them and selling them cheaper in the United States because they're making them with these artificial dyes, which are way less expensive and way less time consuming. Just to put a chemical in there versus, now we're going to add powdered beet juice, or they're going to have to go through the process of getting these colors some other way. And they're always going to be more expensive because it's just like this synthetic made chemical or whatever, that's, however you phrase it, that they're just adding for the simple purposes of color and nothing else. So anyway, but you're right. And they are going to have to make these changes, and it's actually going to become law. And I for one, am excited about that. So, but anyway, I'm even more excited about coming back after this break and talking to have a great little mac and cheese conversation. So, what they say, don't touch that dial. And we'll be right back cooking like a pro in just a moment after this last break.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Experience glowing wild and illuminated Wildlife Lantern Festival at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay Exploration Park in Redding, California. Open select nights April 4th through June 8th, 7 to 10 p.m. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with Asian lanterns inspired by plants and animals from around the world. Plus food, drinks, live performances on select nights, and much more. Don't miss Turtle Bay's Glowing Wild Lantern Festival at the Sundial Bridge. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Redding, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson, and find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC and equal housing lender.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Welcome, welcome back. Cooking like a pro, Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista here. And as I teased several times, I really want to talk about this dish, this mac and cheese, because it's comfort food. It's really medicine for the body and for the soul, you know. And it's interesting, I was talking again off camera with my, or off mic with my wife, on how interesting it is that you can walk into the house sometimes and you got that aroma, that smell that instantly takes you back to a specific time and place. And I'm kind of thinking if you've ever seen the movie Ratatouille, when it is, what's that, Anton Ego, mm-hmm. is that his name?
Yep.
And he takes a bite of that ratatouille and he just instantly goes back to when his, you know, mom was caring for him and feeding him back when he was just a little toddler or a little tyke. But how about for you? Cause for me, aroma, smell, when I walk into a kitchen, I instantly, or a house, I walk into my I don't know, power of aroma, because I've used my nose so much and I use it in from delicate things like, you know, wine tastings, picking up things and all the way to food. I'm just used to it. But, you know, you walk in and there's something that just hits you.
For me, I think it would be zucchini bread would be one. It's a very distinct flavor because we make a kind of a caramelized one. Barbecuing, because my dad did a lot of barbecuing. So that was huge for me. But interestingly, I walked into your mother's house and I smelled an aroma that I only smelled in the house that I grew up in, and it was your mom's mac and cheese, because it was just like my mom's mac and cheese. They don't smell like any other mac and cheese. It is a very specific way it is prepared, and I instantly went, your mom makes it the way I grew up.
You know, I think that you're right, because the mac and cheese that my mom makes is one that's in the actual book. For me, if I was from the professional viewpoint, I'd make a mac and cheese. I would cook my pasta. I'd make my sauce, and I just mix the two of them together. Maybe bake it off for a bit, get a little brown on top with a little cheese. But there's a completely different method that I just was introduced to, and I was talking to my mother about it, and then I was talking to my wife about it. She goes, "Oh, that's what my mom makes it too." So, all right, let's hear it. What's the mac and cheese that my mom makes? Well, it's more in the process. I guess it's the same ingredients for the most part, just they're kind of done a little differently.
It is the process.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is different. And actually, I was
method.
Yeah. Process, whatever. I actually kind of want to check into my grandmother's 1956 Betty Crocker cookbook. This thing is falling apart, and it is a process method that is different. It's very specific, where you cook your pasta, your elbow macaroni.
Yeah, elbow macaroni.
Small elbow macaroni. You drain it, and then you put it in the dish. And then you toss a little bit of butter on it and maybe some salt and pepper. Then you layer it. You don't make a cheese sauce. You actually just put straight shredded cheese over the top of it.
Okay.
And then you can pour some half and half or some milk, and some do some butter drizzled over the top. It is a different
process. Is it multiple layers?
I think your mom's is. Mine wasn't. It was just literally.
Yeah. My mom's is, yeah, because my mom's comes out like a brick. Not in the heaviness of it, but I mean, it's thick. I think mom makes it. It's got to be 3 or 4 inches thick.
It's more stiff. It's not a liquid creamy. The Kraft macaroni cheese and these liquid creamy cheeses, sauce macaroni cheese, I had never had my entire life. I was completely confused what that was. I mean, to that, it's not a baked mac and cheese. It's all about a plain macaroni with a layer of cheese that is baked and gets bubbly and literally crispy and golden brown.
You know, and what you get when you go out to a restaurant is going to be the style that I talked about. It's going to be a cream sauce with the cheese tossed in, with the pasta already cooked, tossed in last. And that's just the way it's done. And that's really for production than any other reason. And I think that's one of the challenges we have, is saying, I don't want the production of something to alter the flavor to where it's of a lesser quality than what I want that final outcome to be. Right, so I think that you have to kind of weigh that out. And with the baked mac and cheese, it's completely different. Completely different. But you get something that's completely different. I think that's exciting about the book, and I think people are going to really super enjoy this recipe because it is different. It's different than what you would normally think to make. And again, from there, you can do whatever you want with it. That doesn't mean you can't, you know, I mean, think outside the box. You can't. Why can't you add, you know, chicken? Or why can't, I mean, in the book, we actually do ours with a clarified butter poached lobster. So basically, we're taking it and moving it up into more of a decadent, place. And I know that some people, you will use larger noodles. One of the things that my mom had pointed out on the noodles was that, you know, you get the bigger noodles and they just fall apart easier. Right, so you want the smaller noodles. I think that's one thing that's important. And you know, whatever else you want to kind of spruce it up with, whether it's, you know, your paprika and turmeric, you want to go a different color, you want a different flavor, maybe you want something cool like a kind of a cool mustard in there. Remember, you've got a lot of cream and cheese, which cream and cheese coat your tongue. So from stepping back and looking at a recipe like that, you might think, okay, you know, I need some high acid. Now, that doesn't mean you need to add the dish to it, but maybe you need, you know, you're serving it with something that, you know, on the side of that might be able to help cut through that a little bit.
Looking at the 56 Betty Crocker cookbook, the way they would do it back then is you would have a key recipe. Here's the basics. Here's the macaroni. Start with that. And you're going to use all these different preparations. They do have a creamy one where you make a creamy sauce that you mix it in and things like that. But a lot of them were layered. And there's a macaroni tomato casserole, macaroni with fried tomatoes. There's a macaroni saute. There's a creamy version. There's an a la creme version. There's Worcester sauce and chili sauce. There's so many different versions. Even, I mean, we're talking back in the 50s.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, I mean, you know, we're talking about back in the 50s.
Yeah, these are back in the 50s. Yeah. I think, honestly, back then, they were kind of leaning more towards the Escoffier version where you had a basic key recipe and you took it in different directions. There's three pages in here of just all kinds of different types of styles of macaroni and cheese.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, I don't recall the year. You could Google it, I guess, on when Julia Child brought French cooking over here. But, there was a big kind of change in the overall cooking that we did. But with what Krista has, and I'm sitting here looking at the book she's looking at across the table. And I mean, but these are great books because they'll teach you after oven breaks, they'll teach you how to, you know, fix your oven. They'll teach you how to fix your lawnmower. They'll teach you how to change your gas, change a tire, and then also make mac and cheese or barbecue. I mean, it's just, remember that it's those old one-stop shopping books. I don't know what they called those, but that's really what they should use as a textbook to get kids through school now.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like a Boy Scout guide. Yeah, they've also got Monday macaroni in here that's got a canned tomato puree. They've got Yankee Doodle macaroni. They've got Lumberjack macaroni. It's just crazy because they're actually going out and trying different things, putting pimentos in them, making it into a loaf, making it into a mousse, making it into a ring. It's kind of fun. If you can find one of these really old cookbooks, this one I just found out, you know, that this is the one I grew up with, but I was looking online and they're selling it for $50.
Yeah. Well, we've got like 900 cookbooks, so maybe we should start selling them. I don't know. I think that you're definitely on to something with people thinking outside the box and just doing something fun. Step back, like we talked about at the beginning of the show today, with that attention to detail. I mean, think about the overall product of what or the project that you're making, whatever this dish is. How do you want that end product to be? And then come back from that. Is it a side dish? Well, maybe it's not that complicated. Well, or maybe it's an entree. Well, then maybe I can do some more things to it. You know, for example, maybe I'm going to top it with like a buttermilk, you know, chicken, you know, dredged in a buttermilk batter, cornmeal and fried. So now I'm kind of leaning that direction of Southern cooking. So maybe I'm going to throw in some sliced okra, you know, or some other kind of maybe some Cajun seasoning, you know, something that kind of will make that dish go a particular direction from a culture standpoint. Because, you know, I'm sure every culture out there has their own, you know, version of mac and cheese in some way or another.
Well, let's go back to my mom's and your mom's recipe. Okay, basic pasta. It's cooked. It's put in the pan. Your mom uses a white jack cheese. I grew up on Tillamook medium cheddar. Okay. There's a difference right there.
Was it white cheddar?
No, it was a yellow. It was medium cheddar. Now, also the difference is your mom puts half and half. My mom used to pour over the top milk. And I'm looking at the Betty Crocker one. You could also go further. You can use sour cream as your dairy component, or you can also use full cream, heavy cream.
You could use cottage cheese. Yeah. I mean, I think you could use, you know, any kind of anything out of the cheese. Like, the one thing you would want to look at is you want to always have a mac and cheese that with cheese that does two things. It melts and it stretches. You know, you want something that's going to melt. It's, you know, and they make these cheeses to melt. It's like American cheese. It's made to melt because you want it to melt on your hamburger, right? Some cheeses don't melt because that sit there forever and it's not going to melt. It's just going to, like a Parmesan cheese, you know, it needs to be grated because if you put it on a burger, it's just going to kind of just stay there. It might soften a bit.
But. Now, here was one more idea I thought was a little crazy. I have not heard of this, but in the Betty Crocker cookbook, with your milk that you pour over the top of your creamery, half and half, they added an egg. They beat in an egg so that it became a little bit of a binder that poured over the top of it. So I thought that was interesting. Yeah. And then some, like your mom, some of these recipes, you actually poured the butter over the top of the cheese instead of mixing it in or dolloping it like your mom does.
Yeah. And another cool thing that mom told me that, you know, hey, you're never too old to learn something was that she says, you know, sometimes I poach my pasta when she's blanching off her pasta to get it kind of to an al dente. So you cook the pasta and then you mix it together, whether you're going to bake it or whether you're going to add a sauce to it. But you'll cook it in chicken stock. So that's just going to add that much more flavor. And I thought that was cool. I was like, geez, mom, you nailed it. That's, I had never thought about that. But boy, the time I tell you goes by so fast for this show, but we very much appreciate you tuning in and listening. Continue to tell people about it if you get the chance. And again, just, have a wonderful week. We have the a big event going on with all the cars this weekend.
Cool April nights.
There you go. And where can they find us again?
Cooking Like a Pro podcast can be found on Apple and Spotify and YouTube.
Oh, and yeah, someone even signed up for our Instagram today. So anyway, you can find us all over the place, Cooking Like a Pro. God bless you folks. Have a wonderful week, and we appreciate you listening to Cooking Like a Pro. Take care.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.